En bij ons is Alon Hilou, een Israëlisch auteur, De dood van een monnik, uitgegeven bij Ambo. En we gaan met hem een praatje daarover hebben, maar in het Engels. Dus ik hoop dat iedereen een klein beetje kan volgen. Mr. Hilou, welkom to this book fair.
Thank you. This beautiful city.
it's a lovely city and it's a lovely place here also, the spot here.
I agree.
We are very lucky with the weather, because that's not always the case. So, let's come to your book. You started The Death of a Monk. It's what we call a historic novel,
right?
Yeah, which means that you started from a real, historic, authentic event. And, well, tell me about that event.
The event is called the Damascus Affair. It took place in Damascus, Syria, in 1840. There was a Jewish community back then in the old city of Damascus, and in February 1840, something really strange happened. A famous monk disappeared.
A Catholic monk.
Catholic monk, Capuchin.
Yeah.
And his name was Tommaso. He mysteriously disappeared, nowhere to be found, not until this very day.
Mm-hmm.
It's a historical mystery. No one knows for sure
what happened
to Tommaso. Back then, about 1 week after his mysterious disappearance, there were rumors in the city that he was kidnapped by the Jewish community in order to use his blood for the Jewish Passover holiday. This is called sometimes as a blood libel. It is known from Europe, from medieval times,
yes,
where a Christian young boy mysteriously disappears and there are false allegations that he was kidnapped by the Jews to use his blood.
So in fact it's a very old story that appears, let's say, every I don't know how many years, but
it appears mainly in Europe, and this is one of the first times where it appears in a Muslim country in the Middle Eastern area. And the reason was that there was a Christian community back then in the city, and they made these false allegations.
Yeah, and they accused the Jewish
Many Jews were arrested, they were subject to torture, some of them died, and many of them falsely confessed that this was true.
Under pressure.
Yes, under pressure, under tortures. And only after 2 months there came a general pardon from the governor that the Jews were not accused and everybody was set free.
So that's the original, let's say, historical event. But then you started from that event, but what did you do with it then?
Well,
because it's a novel.
I was back then a student of dramatic writing in Tel Aviv University.
Yes.
And I told my professor that I was eager to write about this event because my parents and my family came from Damascus. So I wanted to just write about this ancient city, where today, by the way, there is no Jewish community anymore.
They all fled to Israel.
Yes, forced to leave after the Zionism and the establishment of Israel. So he told me, Alon, when you go back to this historical event, try to see if the Jewish members themselves contributed in the way to the blood libel. Could it be that Jews themselves made any contribution to the false allegation? So I read again all the historical materials, and I saw that he was quite correct in his, you know, speculation. For example, one of the first persons to accuse the Jewish members was a poor barber who was Jewish, and he blamed the richest families of the city. So there was a hatred between the poor and the rich.
It's a class struggle.
Yes. So we see rich and poor. And so there were many conflicts inside the community. And then I came across the name of Aslan Farhi, a real-life character. He was 18 years old back then, and he accused his own father for killing the monk. And I said, wait a minute. I mean, blaming a poor barber, blaming the rich is one thing, but for a son to blame his own father is another thing.
Yeah.
And I wanted to focus on him, and I could not find but two facts about this person. One, that he was married to the daughter of the chief rabbi, and two, that he was afraid to sleep with her in the same room. And then my imagination started to work, and I said, listen, if he was married to her and he was afraid to sleep with her, maybe he was forced into marriage for political reasons. He came from a rich family. The rich are married for political reasons to the daughter of the chief rabbi, and maybe he was not even attracted to her. And then I thought maybe he was gay, and maybe I was able to retell history from a gay perspective.
Yes.
And then I was walking in the park near my home in Tel Aviv, and then I had this insight. I knew what happened to Tommaso, or what could have happened. I said, what if are the magical words for writers? What if Tommaso was himself gay?
No.
What if he had a love affair with my protagonist, with Aslan Fahi, and died in his arms? And this explains so many things, because
yes.
Aslan had to destroy any evidence to their encounter, because gay relationships were back then a crime, and if they caught him, he would be subject to a death sentence. So right. he destroyed the body, he chopped the body, he buried it outside the walls of ancient Damascus, and in this way he got rid of his lover, and explains so many things.
Yes.
Why the body was never found, why it became such a big issue to explain the disappearance of Tommaso.
Yeah, and then for a novelist, you have quite a rich idea, of course, the relationship between the son and the father, the relationship between a young man and his lover, yes or no.
It's about relationship between between men.
Yeah.
And once I made a retelling of this historical event, there were so many gay aspects that came out. For example, there was an investigator. His name is Muhammad El-Tali, a real-life character,
mm-hmm.
and he was a singer. Now, back then, it was not allowed for women to sing, so men would perform dressed like women. And I told to myself, here's my drag queen.
Yeah, your drag queen. Yeah, well, because in the novel, your protagonist, he engages in a love affair with what he thinks being a woman. And afterwards, it appeared that the woman is in fact a drag queen.
Yes, exactly. And I thought that a love affair between him and the handsome investigator could also explain why would a son, as I said before, would blame his own father.
Yeah, your novel has quite a high gay appearance. Also, I mean, even if you see the front picture. It's is it a photo or painting? I don't know.
It's a painting. It's a lovely painting
yeah.
Of Aslan Fahi. It should be him. and
it looks like a gay icon.
Well, I hope it will become a gay icon, maybe here in Belgium.
Okay. Yeah.
But it's not only a gay novel. I mean, there's so much more. It's a historical novel, and the language I used in original Hebrew was depicting or imitating 19th century Hebrew, and I think that the translator to Dutch, that's what they tell me, because I could not read it in Dutch, she did a similar thing.
Yeah.
And I think the language here is very much ornamental.
And poetic. Poetical.
And poetical, I hope.
Yeah, sure, it is. I can assure you that.
Thank you.
But coming back to the gay question, is it it's not so common for Israeli authors? Are there like gay novels or poetry or theater?
I would say that every year there are two or three gay novels coming out. Yeah, and there is a very open gay scene in Israel, especially in Tel Aviv. They are openly
only in Tel Aviv, I think. No.
Not only in Tel Aviv.
Not in Jerusalem.
There is a gay pub in Jerusalem.
Ah, really?
Yes, there is.
I didn't know. I haven't seen.
Come and visit. But there is an openly gay singer and filmmakers. I mean, the scene is quite open.
And it's perfectly legal. I mean, there's no.
It is legal in
there's
Israel.
There's no harassment from.
Not at all. On the contrary, I would say that Israel is very gay friendly. Yes, it is.
It is.
Yeah,
well,
maybe
okay.
Surprisingly, but it is.
Yeah, it's surprisingly because we have a Jewish community here in Belgium and here in Antwerp, which is not gay friendly. But of course, these are very
Orthodox
Jews. Yeah,
and
maybe
ultra Orthodox as we have in Jerusalem.
Yeah, with the black clothes and the hats.
I'm not religious. I'm secular, and in Israel there are many people like myself, and it's.
That's maybe a false idea that we have from Israel as being a pure religious country, and while in reality Tel Aviv is a very modern Western city.
It is very modern, but I would say that in general Israel is not a religious country.
Mm-hmm.
It's a country for the Jewish people, but it's not it's not necessarily very religious.
Yeah.
There are so many aspects of it, you see.
Okay. You are teaching at university? No, you are.
I'm a lawyer.
You're a lawyer?
I'm a lawyer for copyright.
You had a degree in theatrical literature.
Yes, I have a degree in dramatic writing. Legal studies.
But also in law.
Yeah, so I practice copyright and intellectual property rights. That's what I do for a living, and I write in my spare time.
Ah, yeah. But you have written for theater also.
Yeah, two plays. And I've also written another novel, which is going to be published in Israel in 5 months.
So this is your first novel?
Yeah, it is.
And it's very successful.
It have been translated into 5 languages already. Mm-hmm. And I went to all the gay capitals of the world lecturing about it. I was in San Francisco and Sydney and London.
And now Antwerp?
Yeah, there is a gay community here. And
there's quite a big gay community. Yeah.
It's very nice.
Yeah.
It has not been translated into Arabic yet, and I hope one day it will happen.
Yeah. Because they're still... that's what we say now in our country for concerning gay liberation. The important thing to do now is towards the Arab part of the population here in our country, who are very closed, let's say, to that subject.
Yes.
And if we hear like who was it, the president of Iran, saying that there are no gay people in Iran, I said, oh, have you killed them all or what?
I think what I was trying to show in my novel is that at any period of time in history and in any place,
of course,
there was a gay scene.
Yeah.
And maybe in a religious city like Damascus, back then it was very underground. Taking place in secret.
Hidden.
But it was anywhere through history. It's part of human behavior and human nature. And you can even see
all over the world and during all the times, of course.
In the Bible. I mean, it's part of us.
The Bible?
Tell me about the Bible. David and Jonathan and the love affair.
I don't know the Bible so well, but indeed, there has been a gay group in Antwerp that called himself David and Jonathan, so it refers to the Old Testament, huh? Yeah.
Yes.
And why had they a love affair in the Old Testament? I don't know the story exactly.
With the what?
Had they a love affair, David and Jonathan?
No, but there are hints for it in the Bible.
Ah, yeah.
Because David tells to Jonathan that his love, that the love they shared is so much better than love to women.
Yeah. Well, okay, there's still hope. And is there any chance that your book will be translated in Arab?
I don't think so. I think it's there are explicit gay scenes there.
Yeah.
And with detailed descriptions, and I think it would be maybe difficult for
a little bit too much.
Yes, too much. Even to Western people, sometimes they say to me that it was too difficult for them to read, but many other people find it
very horny.
Okay.
If you ask my opinion.
In Dutch.
Dutch? Yeah. Okay. Sure. Yeah, you have written sex scenes. It's not easy to write about sex. I mean, that's really, it's not easy to write about sex in a way that it's not ridiculous or that's not scientific or that's not, I don't know.
It's not a cliche. I think in every sexual scene I had in the book, I was trying to add the meaning behind the sex, because it's not only the contact between body to another body. For example, when Aslan, the 19 years old, meets Tommaso, it's like he feels that the older man heals him. He feels it's a cure for his unmanly behavior. So there's a whole meaning, and this is the way sexuality, in my opinion, is to be understood. Because it's not only about the contact, but about the meaning we have.
Yeah, and it's also the idea of what is manly behavior. You said at a certain moment that the father is very angry because his son has not a real masculine or manly behavior.
His son has a strange habit to dress. I mean, his mother dresses him like a little girl.
Yeah.
She takes a dress, and this is like a game they play. And the father caught them and really gets very, very much annoyed and angry. And this is why eventually he forces his son, in my book, to be married to a woman.
Yes. Yeah.
And I mean, I think that when you speak about gay themes, it has many times to do with what does it mean to be a man. The fact that a person is attracted to another man, does it in any way influence his manhood or not?
It's a difficult question.
Yeah, I don't have an answer, but
yes. It's almost a philosophical question, man. Some of the French philosophers in the 70s and 80s have dealt with that, as Foucault and Hockenheim.
It's fun because straight people, they are attracted to women, and this in a way can weaken their manhood, because I mean what they are looking for is friendship of women, and sometimes intimacy between men can be interrupted just as having a more manly meaning to your life.
Yeah. Well, we will not get a solution to that question today.
Not today.
In this conversation. But I can advise all listeners to read your novel, because it's very well written. It's passionate to read, and it's very horny. Some scenes are really very very horny.
Thank you very much.
I loved reading them. Okay, I'll say in Dutch once again. Het was een gesprek met Alon Hilou. Het boek heet De Dood van een Monnik en is uitgegeven bij Ambo. En het is absoluut een aanrader. De Dood van een Monnik, Alon Hilou. Thank you very much for this conversation.
Thank you.
And wish you very much success with your novel.
Thanks.